Rolling. What's happening, y'all? Andy and Zach and Summer. And we have another special guest with us today, Mr. John Harris, an old friend of mine, owner and operator at CrossFit Gallatin. John, thanks for coming out today.
Thanks a bunch for having me.
Yeah, man. We actually just had our own pseudo podcast conversation a few weeks ago where we pontificated the pros and cons of the American style kettlebell swing and the hard style kettlebell swing. Yeah. So if anybody hasn't already listened to that, that's about three or four episodes back and also on YouTube. So if you want to see me and John in action on that, go ahead and look that up.
Yeah. Maybe not the best representative of the CrossFit American swing, but you know,
sure.
I still had my 7 cents in there.
Yeah. Yeah. More than your 2 cents. So John, give us the scoop. Obviously we let the cat out of the bag that you're a CrossFit owner, but maybe like in a nutshell, give us a little bit of the overview of your timeline in training and as a gym owner.
All right. Well, that's a big nut to crack. So I'm wanting to say timeline wise, probably late 2009, 2010-ish, me and my buddy Ryan, we worked together at Gibson Guitars. Ryan wanted to lose some weight and I wanted to gain some mass because at the time I was about 130 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was a pretty tiny guy, visible ribs and such. But the other side of that, you know, self-esteem, self-confidence, feeling like a real man, never had it. Always felt less than. So me and Ryan decided we were going to do P90X together and keep each other accountable. And it was legit, man. We never missed a day. We did the program exactly. We had all the equipment, and I even followed the meal plan to a T. And after that 90 days, I had gained like 15 pounds.
Wow.
And I was so like flabbergasted at that process that Ryan ended up losing 40 pounds.
Wow.
And we were just like, dude, this stuff works. Let's do it again.
So this was before
CrossFit and all this.
Okay, so this was like both of your first foray into fitness, period. And you did it together.
We did it together.
That's cool. That's awesome.
And it was an experience. We did it again right after to see if we could double the results.
Oh, sure.
Literally nothing happened. I kind of stagnated. And Ryan kind of stayed where he was. But really, I will credit Ryan from Whole Strength CrossFit, who is another gym owner in the Nashville area. He found CrossFit on YouTube, and we started kind of doing it in his garage basement thing. You know, it's a pretty common story in the CrossFit world where a couple guys start doing it together, and then more friends come, and then more friends come, and it was just, before you know it, we're having classes in his basement. And then we decide to open a gym in Nashville. Did that for a couple years, and neither of us were very schooled in the ways of business, and he'll probably admit all this at the same time. So it wasn't looking like I was gonna have much of a great future at Whole Strength. So that's when a whole lot of other stuff happened in life, you know, divorce and stuff. Ended up moving back home to Gallatin, and I decided that, you know, I'm going to open up my own gym. And that was early 2017 when I ran a Facebook ad and got a couple clients start coming to my garage.
2017. That's wild. Okay.
I think that was maybe February or March of 2017.
Okay.
And then ended up training those gals for a few months, trying to find a spot. Looking pretty bleak. I mean, needing tens of thousands of dollars to move into some commercial space. And
right.
With one random Craigslist ad that I found online and signed a lease in October of 2017, opened the doors January of 2018. And here we are 5 years later.
That's pretty incredible. So I'm sorry, she was getting a little fussy. Was the ultimate goal to open a fitness business? Or just kind of as you were working through it, you're like, you know, this is kind of the direction I want to take this.
Well, you know, I wanted to feel better about myself and, you know, get stronger and all these things. And really when Ryan and I started doing this ourselves, and then our friends started coming, and like, I remember helping someone for the first time.
Right.
And I was like, wow, like I'm helping someone. And then there's another member at Whole Strength. When I saw this guy, John Nettie, not just body physically transformation, but just his mind and his confidence and self-esteem, seeing that progression over, you know, 6-7 months, it was like, as an adult, it was really cool to like be a part of that. And I was like, I need to figure out a way to do this like for a living. And kind of make this shift in, you know, occupation, but also, you know, because I'm getting this fulfillment, like, wow, I feel like I have some sort of grander purpose than building guitars all day, which sounds great. It's cool. But there was, you know, it was literally a dead-end job.
Sure.
Totally capped out. I needed to go into management to make any more money. And those people do not last. If you ever get bored, just get on glassdoor.com and read Gibson Guitar Reviews. They, I think we were voted the worst place to work in America in 2020.
Wow.
So don't fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure that was a thing.
Oh, God.
That's pretty wild.
So I was there for almost 13 years. And then I put my 2-week notice in, you know, the summer of 2018. And yeah, dude, that's like a totally different life.
Yeah.
Like it's not even real to me sometimes.
Well, you know, it's very funny that you mentioned that it's you and Ryan who kind of got your start together. And of course, he's gone on to be quite a successful business owner in his own right.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely know this, John, Andy, obviously you know this. I try to have coffee with everybody in the industry in Nashville. I try to, you know, at least somewhat casually know, you know, everybody who's willing to, you know, go out for coffee, expand their network and whatever. So I can remember having coffee with Ryan way back in the day.
Yeah.
And then of course, you know, some years later, he brought me in for a kettlebell workshop for his staff that I... that I infamously had filmed with a black eye. So if anybody has seen some of the workshop content where I'm sporting a real shiner, that was also right after I started jujitsu. So I had like a perpetual bruised face.
I remember that.
Yeah, but that was at Ryan's spot. That was at Whole Strength CrossFit. And I was always very impressed with him, his gym, and his staff. And yeah, and have been back for a few workshops and different events of his in the years since. And yeah, he's a stellar dude.
Yeah, I will credit. I knew that like when we started getting into CrossFit and we started getting serious about like opening a gym, we kind of knew about the flack that the CrossFit community was kind of getting, and a lot of that had to do with a pretty like outspoken campaign from like the NSCA, NASM, these organizations that really tried to put CrossFit in a negative light. And if I'm being quite honest, there are definitely some CrossFit gyms out there that bring the negative light to themselves. So we wanted to make a conscious effort to like just do everything way better than everybody else. And I remember before the gym was even open, we were talking to you know, like physical therapists and chiropractors, powerlifting people, weightlifting people, kettlebell people. That's the first thing I did when me and Ryan were talking about, I was like, well, I'm coaching this class. I'm making this much money per class. If I coached every class, every day, all month, dude, I'm not making half of what I'm making at Gibson. So what's the plan here? And both of us were going through this, like, how do we do this, you know, ethically as a business and like give people opportunities. And, you know, to this day, if I have to make a pivotal business decision, usually I'm calling Ryan just to bounce it off of him. And both of us will tell you, like, we didn't really know exactly what we were doing. All we know was that we wanted to do it really well. And the first thing I did when I kind of moved out of Nashville back to Gallatin is I hired you as a coach. And I started going to Poe's gym over there. And, like, I want to learn how, like, all the nerdy crap about kettlebell stuff, all the nerdy crap about powerlifting, and I want to bring it to the CrossFit sphere and just be an absolute stud of a coach, almost like specializing in all of the specialties for a little while. And then, you know, going to your workshops, you know, other people's clinics and stuff, just really, like, trying to elevate the experience of a CrossFit athlete by dissecting the little compartments that CrossFit pulls from and just make it totally over the top.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that's the way that it should be done, because I think that is the spirit of CrossFit, is bringing the best of the best from different modalities and kind of putting them under one roof. I think sometimes, at least in my experience, that idea gets a little fuzzy when, instead of going to the source and reverse engineering the source, you kind of just get like a half-baked version of the thing.
I think it's a lot of CrossFit.
All gumboed into the same soup.
It's kind of what CrossFit is.
Sure.
You know, and it's difficult to manage all the intricacies of all the kind of sport specific, if you will, like kettlebell swings, American, or, you know, Russian. You know, you talk to a CrossFitter, any random CrossFitter, a kettlebell swing is an American swing. Where I always learned, well, actually, my good sir, you know, the Russian swing is kind of like, it's the whole point. And then you kind of bastardize it with an American swing, where it's still a movement and it's got its own merits and stuff. But I can remember, like, going to Poe's gym and learning all kinds of stuff that, you know, all this nerdy powerlifter stuff that you're not going to be exposed to in the CrossFit realm. I just don't think you are.
Sure.
Maybe there's not enough time. Maybe there's not enough resources to, like, get into the nitty gritty of all these things. I think if anything, CrossFit probably has the most exposure from, like, the Olympic weightlifting side, because it's so much of a part of the CrossFit ethos. But I remember the year, it was 2018, and all of a sudden in the CrossFit Open, now we're playing with dumbbells. Like, we're not doing kettlebell stuff anymore. And I remember dumbbells disappeared in Nashville because all the affiliates had to run out and get dumbbells when they announced that these dumbbells were going to come into play.
Oh, interesting.
And I remember dumbbell snatches. If you do a dumbbell snatch and a kettlebell snatch, it ain't even close to the same thing. And I think sometimes by CrossFitters experiencing that, it's like, oh, well, it's just a snatch. I'm just going to put it over my head. And I was like, well, there's a few other things to it. So that's what I tried to do, and Ryan, both of us try to do in our businesses, try to be a little more mindful of the little things, about all the things that are going on, you know?
Right. Well, I think you more or less answered the obvious kind of big question that I had, which is, how do you run things? Maybe not specifically as a contrarian to the stereotypical, or I shouldn't even say stereotypical. I should say the caricature of the wild, wacky, kind of raising your eyebrow style of CrossFit that, you know, Andy and I as old school-ish strength and conditioning guys, you know, we have our own, like, biases. So obviously you kind of know where I'm going with that. But yeah, what are some other things? How is the experience of a CrossFit Gallatin maybe different? Or what's your particular stamp? What makes you guys special? I'm kind of trying to throw a softball out here to kind of allow you to brag on the way that you run your gym, run your programming, run your classes and your training.
Well, yeah, I'll give you my pitch since you're wanting to join CrossFit Gallatin and all that.
Absolutely.
So, usually I break the ice with just asking a question like, well, what do you want to get out of this experience? And 9 times out of 10, it's like, well, I just want to get healthier. I want to get more fit. I want to get stronger, or I want to lose 20 pounds or whatever. So then I was like, okay, yeah, sounds great. I mean, it's a pretty common goal. How will you know when you are more fit, when you are more strong? Like, what kind of what would you have to be able to do to be able to say I am successful? And usually somebody just looks at me like deer in the headlights, like, well, I don't know. I was like, cool, you don't have to know. But if you want to feel like you're making some headway into this, you know, thing that you're about to get into, you need some sort of way to determine if you're getting results or if you're, you know, wasting your time. So I basically, this line that we use a lot is like, I don't sell gym memberships, I sell coaching programs. Gym memberships are typically like, I'm thinking of like the Planet Fitness experience, or maybe even a Gold's Gym, where you're getting, you know, you're paying for access to a room, access to equipment, access to, you know, certain amenities, you know, hot towels and water massage. So all these things are cool. They're great, useful. But a lot of the business model of that is like to try to get as many people into a paying membership where if they don't use it, it's no sweat off their back. You know, it's like, ah, crap, well, I need to get down there and cancel that thing. But so we kind of do the opposite. I want to coach people. I want to know their names. I want to know what they want to get out of it, what are their kids' names. You know, they're out of town this weekend, blah, blah, blah. But in order to be a member of CrossFit Gallatin, you have to go through a pretty hefty assessment phase before you even join group classes. If you're thinking about joining a CrossFit gym and you call up said CrossFit gym and you ask about joining, and they just say, yeah, the price are to this, and when you want to start? And then they tell you, it's like, yeah, you can start tomorrow, just come to 9 a.m. class. If that is your experience, I would say run for dear life. There needs to be some sort of an assessment of where you are, so then we can tell you where you can go safely. So it's usually 5 personal training sessions. You meet one-on-one with a coach. Usually takes about a week and a half-ish. We're gonna assess 15 different categories of fitness that we deem as good metric markers. Front squat is usually the first one we go over. But before we put a barbell in your hands, we're gonna have you do some goblet squats to a box. Then we're gonna lower the box, and we're gonna remove the box, and we're talking about what the barbell's doing and why we do front squat instead of back squat. Some people say, well, why don't we do back squat? I'm like, well, you know, if things get hairy, you can dump a front squat and everything will be okay. You know, we won't get into the back squat stuff until some other categories. But basically, we're gonna give you an assessment and we give you a level. Like if you can, I'll tell you right now, if you can front squat 315 as a man, a 1 rep max, then you're gonna be in this red category that we have. And it starts as like a white belt, yellow, orange, blue, purple, brown, black, then red.
Right,
right. So that's been my personal mission over the past year. But if you can front squat a 45-pound barbell 8 times, you're going to be yellow. And maybe Andy says, this feels pretty good. I front squatted 225 before and it was good. I was like, okay, well, before we jump up to there, there's like a series of things that you have to perform before you can even show me that. This is really helpful for dudes that need to be humbled. To where you can, if I front squat 5 inches too high and it's 315, well, you know, that doesn't mean much to me. But we kind of walk you up. And then also, it's a way to, you know, guys typically give themselves too much credit. Women don't give themselves enough credit, is kind of my experience. So a lot of times I end up surprising both of them, where like a guy thought he would do better and a lady didn't think they would do that great. So you're looking at this massive map that we have on the wall, and there's just so many different degrees to all these different categories. And then when you show up to class, if it's a front squat and running dominant workout, and in those categories you have, you know, blue 2 ranking and maybe orange 3 ranking in those categories respectively, maybe you do the workout and you do a little bit better than the goal, which is complete this workout in 13 minutes or whatever it is. And then if you do blue, if it takes you 17 minutes, then I'm going to come up to you at the end of class and say, hey, looks like you did pretty good, but the stimulus was to be done in around 13 minutes. So maybe next time we go for orange and vice versa. You know, if you get done really fast with orange, you do a more technical workout or heavier workout, longer rep scheme. So it's a way for somebody like myself, who's, you know, a pretty experienced CrossFit athlete, you could say, I can work out next to my 65-year-old PT client, Debbie, and we're doing the same thing, but it's modified to our personal skill set. And there's 6 degrees of those variations. So there's a workout of the day, but there's 6 variations of that workout walking down from black, brown, purple, blue, orange, yellow, white. So a guy might be doing deadlifts at 155, and then we might have a client doing kettlebell deadlifts with an 18-pound kettlebell at the same time. Right. And we're both getting the stimulus that we're all trying to go for safely.
Yeah. I love that, actually. That's an interesting kind of takeoff point from what Andy was talking about last week, is when is enough enough, and to have some progressions, some standards that are on the wall, so to speak, kind of helps that. And not everybody needs to be a black belt, but to kind of, to maybe, and then maybe that's where you as a coach can kind of put some nuance where it's like, hey, if you're a purple belt in pretty much all your patterns, that's fantastic.
Pretty dang good.
You know? So, yeah.
I've often wondered about the arc of an athlete. Like, the line is like, when is enough enough? Right now, I'm in the best shape of my life. Like, strength.
You like look great, man.
Everything.
Well, I was going to say, you look great.
Yeah. I mean, the beard, you've got to be approaching black belt status with the beard. So.
Right. It's a divisive piece for a lot. Especially like in the YouTube world. So you should get on some of my videos and watch some of those comments. I have people that are just like roasting me about this beard, and then the opposite. So it's like to each their own.
You can't please them all.
You can't. But I personally wanted to get all of the strength-based categories into the red. That was just a personal goal for me. But I've often wondered, like, how strong is strong enough? And then as I'm getting older, I'll be 37 here in a few weeks. I can front squat, you know, 335 right now. How long can I maintain that? And does it matter? I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. It's probably going to hurt my feelings as like my strength goes down, but golly, it's like, I kind of liken it to, we all have a car that we drive every day, like a daily driver. And sometimes I feel like my car that I'm driving right now is like an Indy car. Mm. Like, I can go 300 miles an hour if I need to.
Right.
But at 7:15 a.m., Monday through Friday, I'm rolling through the school zone at 15 miles an hour, taking my daughter to school. The speed limit on the highway is like, you know, 70. I'm never getting to, like, I might get into that 80 mile per hour range,
right,
if I'm like impatient. I'm never going 300 miles an hour. So it's almost like this trajectory of strength acquisition to where I don't know if it matters. Like, I recently hit a 470 total in Olympic weightlifting. It was the last category on this map that we use. And it was a 265-pound clean and jerk and a 215-pound snatch?
You said 470 total?
Yeah, yeah.
And you said 265?
265. So 205 snatch. Yeah. So that was a recent goal that I hit. And I basically, I didn't quit doing CrossFit, but almost. I was basically doing Olympic weightlifting 3 days a week for about 9 weeks. I kind of specialized in that because all the other strength numbers, you know, I got a 455 deadlift, 335 front squat. We have a kettlebell component to that, a kettlebell EMOM test. It's like 23 snatches every minute for 10 minutes at 53 pounds. So all these things, that it, and what I like about this map that we use is everybody has a trajectory. You know, for a front squat, a guy is going to start with a 24-inch box and a 26-pound kettlebell. He's going to touch his butt to the box and stand up. That's just a set height. For someone who's more vertically challenged, that's going to be a little bit easier. But then we take away the box, we get a lower box. And so you have this, you start with a 26-pound bell goblet squat to a 24-inch box. And then I think red five front squat is like 355 maybe. That's like the top of the line. Like that's enough. Like what? But is 335 enough? It's 20 pounds off, man. Do I have to keep going? I'm not sure. But as I get older, I've wondered, you know, managing that mentally and physically. I'm not sure of like the path. Like we have a bunch of really young athletes at the gym and maybe they're in the upper orange. We have like a new lady that's finishing up her assessments this week. She's going to be probably a solid yellow athlete. So she has a trajectory. She can get up into that crazy red level range. Does she need to? Does she need to feel bad about not getting there? And then in turn, does she need to feel bad about not caring about getting there?
Right. Well, you are speaking the language of the theme that Andy and I pretty much bring up every single week.
Okay.
Which is as aging athletes, mid-30s, approaching late 30s with growing responsibilities, quite literally, growing right before your very eyes.
Yeah, three kids.
Right. When is enough enough?
I don't know.
Where?
10 kids.
Right, right. When do we stop with the kids? But and that's something that we have to come to grips with as dudes who have probably been motivated through most of our lives to just keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. Like there's no other conversation apart from get stronger, get bigger, get more jacked. And so now it's like, okay, now the conversation has to be more nuanced. And I think that's something that we're each kind of coming to grips with in our own ways.
Well, and I think for me personally, and for a lot of my clients, it's like at this point, it's like stay in the game, really. Like I was talking to my client again, we talked about this, like when is enough enough? And this client of mine has been with me for about 10 years, and she's a petite woman that I've been working with. She's got grandkids, like a 3 or 4 story house that she runs up and down the steps all day long. And her best deadlift all time was like 155, and which is great. For her size, she's probably 130. Best all time, 155 years ago. She gets a little, you know, if we get close to it, like today she repped 135, made it look easy. She gets a little aches and pains here and there. She's in her 60s. And so we were talking about it, and I was like, I think when, and we've talked about this before, when what we're doing in the weight room starts interfering with life outside of here, that's when we've gone a little too far, I think. Because you've got kids, grandkids, you've got a house you're running, like you host all the time, you like to cook. If what we're doing in here affects you adversely outside of here, then that's when we've gotten a little too far, I think.
That's a
great
way to look at it.
Yeah, and well, you know, and that looks different for everybody, but at this point, I think even for my own age, is just stay in the game. You know, I've had a torn bicep, I've had this shoulder surgically repaired, this shoulder needs to be surgically repaired, I've got back issues, hip issues. Each week now, it's just like, don't do the things that's going to cause pain in a dumb way. Like, don't be dumb. Yeah. Like, enjoy, like, just go lift and enjoy it and have fun. Like, push when you can push, back off when you need to back off, but stay in the game. And make sure that, like, getting down on the ground and playing with her is not like a, like, oh, like, there are more important things in your, like, not even before her. There's just more important things in my life outside of what I do for a living and lifting. If what I'm doing in the gym is adversely affecting that, I think that's when I'm kind of playing with fire. So, again, that looks different for everybody, but.
That's kind of an individual thing, is where that whole weightlifting cycle that I did here recently, I was talking to Zach about this, and I'm wanting to say it was like 3 weeks before I finally hit that 265. I hit the 205 snatch within like maybe 5-6 weeks, and I needed this 265 so I didn't have to get more on the snatch, right? So, which was a problem that flipped immediately. I thought I was going to have more problems with the snatch, but I ended up putting like 40 pounds on my snatch pretty quickly. But it's just, you know, specializing 3 days a week, sure, doing a lot of, you know, high hang snatches and stuff. And I remember it was right before I was going to be out of town for a little over like maybe like 2 weeks. I was going to be in Uganda for a while, and I really wanted to hit that number before I left. And it was the Saturday before we were leaving. And I told Zach, I was like, I had more no reps in that. I tried to do 265 for like 2 hours. And I had more failed reps in that 2 hours than I've had in the past 5 years. That's, wow. And that's not an exaggeration, because I typically just don't fail reps. And I remember being like just like demoralized emotionally. And I was like, this needs to be done. I cannot keep like driving this thing home. This goal needs to be acquired so I can just, you know, move on to whatever's next. And I remember my wife was sitting at the table at the gym, and I think 10 a.m. is when open gym starts on Saturday. And from 10 a.m. until almost 1, I tried to get that 265. I mean, I think I counted it. I have a YouTube video that documented the whole ridiculous process. I think it was like 23 failed reps, failed attempts. And I was like, I'm going to tweak this. This time I'll get it. This time I'll get it. And like, you could see it in my face, like as I'm like talking to the camera at the end of the day. I was just so pissed. And then, you know, I was out of town. I was in Uganda doing some video work for this nonprofit. Just like, crazy stuff. It's something I do part time. Like, I do like high end media work for like nonprofits that like can't afford it, and I give them these assets for like fundraising. And not even 4 days after I killed myself trying to get that 265, I was literally eating termites with these kids that have never ever had parents their whole lives. They're basically orphans. So I basically like gave myself an FU speech that night. I was like, you're a real piece of shit right now, man. Like, you got so emotionally charged trying to do something these kids don't even know exists. Like, right. Like, you lift weights for what? Like, why do you, like, I don't get it. Like, they don't get it. And it was a very jarring experience to where, like, I could do 255. I could replicate that all day. But for some reason, 255 was not enough. Right. 265 made the total, which gave me that red check mark in the Olympic weightlifting category at CrossFit Gallatin. Who cares?
Right.
Like, who cares? But if you say that to somebody who's like getting started and they're in the yellow and they're looking at orange, like, oh man, it'd be cool to do a pull-up. Like, I think one pull-up for a guy starts at like orange 2. So there's all these other things, prerequisites that kind of need to be met before we even talk about pull-ups. And you're talking about like someone who's never done a pull-up in their whole life, then they're still making it, you know? Like you said, stay in the game. So many people are not even in the game.
Right.
They're just barely surviving, you know? And you got people that are like feeling bad about themselves because they can't hit 265 on a clean and jerk. Or 155 on a deadlift.
Right.
You know, it's all perspective.
That's an interesting point. And it's something that we as coaches kind of have to play with. We kind of play with people's psychology in a way. Because you want people to be invested in themselves. Be invested, that also means to a large degree, be invested in their physical performance.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with being excited about doing physical things you've never been able to do before, hitting new PRs, breaking into new levels of strength, conditioning, whatever the case may be in performance. But then at a certain point in time, you don't want to let that investment in performance supersede someone's investment in just, let's say, mental quality of life,
yeah.
emotional quality of life.
Quality
of dress, man. I know that. So it's like, when does the medicine start becoming a poison?
Well, I think that's what makes it important as coaches, because I think we live most of our lives in this zone of, we have these clients that have these goals and these, maybe I won't say expectations, but they have goals, and our job, our literal job, is to help push them harder than they've ever been pushed, or harder than they'll push themselves to reach those goals. I think the flip side of that coin is to know when to pump the brakes, or to know when to stop that individual, or to know, like, one of my clients tells me, he's like, half the reason I come here is for the things you won't let me do. Because my part of my job is to push people, and the other part is to look at someone, know their performance, and be like, hey, like, based on what you do for a living and your job and your quality of life, I think I don't know if what we're about to do or what you're talking about doing is really a great idea. So I'm not saying you can't, but I'm like, I think there's a cost benefit we should be discussing here. Like this client that I have, he's a physique client. So his calories are low always. And we talk about the cost benefit of always living in that low calorie state. He's a musician who travels. So it's like, you know, and he's a piano player. So his elbows and his wrists can be problematic if we go too hard. So if we're getting in the gym and there's something that I want to do, I'm like, I think we should approach this in XYZ way, because I want to spare those wrists, or I want to spare those elbows. Because you got to go play tonight. Like, remember, like...
Yeah, that's a real thing.
Yeah. Like, and I tell people...
You might not play tonight.
Yeah, and I tell people, I'm like, I live here. This is my world. This is my universe. I live here. But y'all don't. Y'all live out there. So if what we're doing in here is interfering with all that out there, then that's a problem. Like, I want to push you towards your goals, but, like, let's pump the brakes for a second. What's really important outside of this room? Like, keep that goal the goal. And then let's see how we can modify our training in here so that we can, you know, make your life easier or better outside of here. But if what we're doing in here is, again, going back to like kids, if you can't keep up with your kids or your grandkids, or if you're just like hurting, and I told Zach the other day, I was like, if I'm hurting you, like soreness wise, so badly that the next day you're laying on the couch inactive, I don't think I'm doing you any favors. You know, if we're talking about having an active lifestyle, going for walks, you know, hanging out with the kids, walking the dog, if you're so sore from a workout that you don't feel like moving, I don't think I did a good job there. So, like, I call it dancing. There's a careful dance between pushing someone to, like, those limits and pulling them just far enough back behind it so that they can go and live their life tomorrow and not really think about it.
Yeah, it reminds me of like affecting your, you know, outside life, outside of the gym and stuff. And there was a time where I was basically focusing on like just bulking more, like trying to add some more muscle mass. And I was doing the big three a lot: bench, squat, deadlift, just a lot of power building stuff, accessories. And, you know, I think I hit like a 225 PR on bench like a couple years before, because I was a pretty small dude, and I was just going pretty heavy into like benching a lot. And one bad bench press, something kind of clicked and popped in my back and in my neck. I was like, oh, that did not feel great. What was that? 2 days later, I couldn't do any pull-ups. And I remember I was coaching this baseball team, just like a strength and conditioning class, probably like middle schoolers. And I was demoing like a ring row, like a TRX type, and I couldn't do it in front of them. And I had to like play it off like, yeah, that's the bottom position. And then I kind of got up and like just kind of motioned with my arms like, and you're going to pull like this, and you're going to touch my left arm was basically just like a light switch turned off. And then turns out I did PT and chiropractic stuff for a few months. PT was like, yeah, you just gotta be patient, man. Let's go through the process. Go be patient. It's like, and I got to the point where I couldn't even sleep in my bed anymore. I was like in a recliner, basically in tears at night. Got an MRI, and I had a complete like subluxation of a disc, like the C5, C6 disc. It was just totally obliterated. And then gave like the permission link to my chiropractor, and he called me because he's a good friend of mine. He called me and said, dude, you need to schedule surgery like now because we cannot fix this. And my left arm atrophied, like disappeared. Couldn't do any pull-ups, couldn't do jack. And I remember the pain was so bad. I was in Nigeria for a while and I was flying back and I was in the Heathrow airport and I had like a 6-hour layover. The pain was so bad I was about to throw up. And I was like keeping myself from throwing up because it was February of 2020.
Oh.
So
oh boy.
I said, if I throw up in this airport, they're not going to let me on this airplane.
All right.
And I remember got on the airplane. I had my surgery scheduled for February 28th to get this disc replacement. Technically, I wasn't supposed to be out of the country either, but I didn't tell them anything. But I remember we got stuck in Chicago, and I'm trying not to throw up. And we landed the plane in Nashville at like 1 a.m. because we got delayed. And I walked out of the gate into the bathroom, threw up everywhere. And I just remember like, man, that was a close one. But that's something where like, you know, not even like a super heavy bench press. Wasn't it like crazy? I just drove my head into the back of the bench a little too hard, trying to keep up with those USAPL standards.
Oh, yeah.
And something got shifty. And then I basically did not work out for about 8 months. Started doing like push-ups on a box like a couple months after my surgery. And I remember like as I was weightlifting, trying to get that 265, and I was like, you're gonna hurt yourself and it's gonna be bad and you're gonna be out of commission and you're gonna hate yourself. So that was probably a big life lesson going through that weightlifting cycle of like making sure that, you know, some days you're just not gonna have it, some days you are. And maybe at like my age, and the things that I'm doing with my family and in business, in the grand scheme of things, if I can't, you know, clean and jerk 265, does it really matter? You know, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, it's wild. Nobody comes out unscathed.
Well, you know, I think it's a good, it's hard, right? All of us are going to agree. It's really hard. Part of what we do is to push our physical limits. Like that's the point, is to keep pushing physical limits, to know like when to stop or to like pull it back. Or you know, I call it time dilation. Instead of looking at adding 5 or 10 pounds to my deadlift every couple weeks or whatever, now we're looking at every couple months or every quarter or whatever. And we talked about this the other day. I have very pedestrian strength numbers, and that was before I shredded my shoulder and shredded the shoulder. And my best all-time dead was 405, which is very pedestrian strength numbers. And to like pigeonhole myself, to bottleneck myself just to rip 405, I was like, what am I going to do? Do that again? It took me like, I had hit it before, but it took me like 8 months to get it back of like doing the thing and being consistent. To get 405, like, do I want to do that again to pull 415?
Meanwhile, average Joe is walking down the sidewalk out here in this apartment complex, probably couldn't deadlift 135.
That's true. I do think about that. And then
That's wild.
Well, and then there are some...
They say, what pedestrian are you comparing yourself to?
Yeah, well, and then there's some people that can probably pull 405 for reps. I'm like, ooh.
That's fair, too.
Yeah.
I know you have to compare yourself to your buddy Zach when it comes to these strength numbers, but you really shouldn't. You really should not torture yourself like that, comparing yourself to me.
Oh, man. You're shorter, yeah. So you haven't moved as far.
I'm also a lot stronger.
And he does sumo, so he's a cheater anyway.
That's fine.
To be fair, I haven't pulled sumo in many years.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's cool. Yeah. You can be stronger. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've stopped caring about how strong I am.
How do you define these things?
This is my trash talk. Yeah. I have no definition for anything that comes out of my mouth. But specifically, let me not totally scapegoat that question. My definition of what?
So Andy and I have traded some numbers back and forth, hypothetical things and such. But you know, you're a professional in this industry and also an experienced lifter of sorts. How do you determine what is strong enough? You know, do you have specific markers that you say, I want to be able to maintain this? Or are you training for any sort of, you know, specific progression right now? If not, why not?
Well, you know, for better or for worse, my style over the years has been to constantly move the goalpost, constantly move the target. So I've been through my kettlebell phase. Like, listen, I very much pigeonhole myself as a kettlebell guy, and for good reason. But I did my level 2 strong first kettlebell cert. That's my line in the sand with that. Like, I got my half body weight press. I've done the 5-minute snatch test. I've done the heavy get up. I've done, you know, all the technique stuff. Like, the line has been drawn in the sand for kettlebells. I've crossed it. I don't ever have to prove anything to anybody ever again when it comes to a kettlebell.
Okay.
You know? So I feel kind of like good about saying that. What's also funny is that I just benched the 100-pound dumbbells.
I saw that.
Yes.
Looking juicy.
And thank you. And that's something that I've kind of had in my mind for a while, because I kind of hung up the barbell bench press a while ago. But I'm a decently strong presser, and dumbbells never tore me up like barbell did. So I always kind of had my eye on, well, let's say 2 years ago, I could not fathom benching the hundreds. I just absolutely could not fathom that. And I probably actually had somewhat of a mental block around 75s or 80s. So really, I've just, and Andy can tell you, I've just been cranking out the 80s, 85, 75s, you know, right around that space.
How many reps are we talking?
With the hundreds?
Or 100s, 70s, 80s, like where are you kind of?
Oh, well, I did a triple and then a double, I think, with the hundreds.
Yeah, okay.
But no, like, honestly, I've very much been taking a Dan John easy strength approach with my bench. 2 sets of 5. 3 sets of 3. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
So depending on how I'm feeling on the day, 80s, 85s, 2 sets of 5, 3 sets of 3. And then just as I figured it would be the case, Andy and I were just training on last Saturday. And he was like, if you're feeling it, let's hit those hundreds. And I was like, oh man, I don't know. But
in context, we had hit, what, 90s the week before?
90s. I think so. 90s. I think so.
Yeah, I threw 90s for 10, so I was like, I can...
Yeah, I talk a lot of trash until Andy pulls out, yeah, I did 90s for 10.
So subtle, man.
So, but something else, I mean, but talking about line in the sand. As soon as I did that, I was like, you know what? That's great. I really like the idea of benching the hundreds for like maybe 3 to eventually 5 reps, but I have no motivation to bench 105s.
So is the 100 number just a convoluted thing that you've come up with your head, or?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, a guy my size, my build, okay, throwing around the hundreds is, I mean, it's not bad.
Yeah.
And again, the most cliche thing is for any guy is to like consistently press to push the bench press numbers higher, 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 higher. It's a cliche thing. How much you bench? Well, I kind of feel like I've hit my line in the sand with benching, and I don't ever feel like I really will ever have to go heavier than that. Maybe crank up the reps.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. But I don't have any motivation to go any heavier, because I'm just tickled pink that I worked up to the hundreds. And so another example of like moving the goalpost is, okay, as you guys know, a couple years ago, I got into jiu-jitsu. So jiu-jitsu is now its own realm of performance goals. And I'm doing the half marathon in a couple months. So I've just been running.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, so that's a whole nother thing, you know? So it's like, again, Andy and I have talked about this a lot. Pretty much at the beginning of every year, I try to put some other like physical goal kind of metric in the system that will make me have to put my otherwise like standard training kind of on the back burner to kind of just do something else, make something else a priority.
That was exactly kind of what I was going to do after the weightlifting thing was my worst category in this whole method that we use is we have a 20-minute rowing test. And then we have a running test, like a mile run. You kind of graduate up to the mile after like a 200, 400, 800 type of progression. But my worst category is this 20-minute row test. And in order to get, red is just like, it's insanity. But
what's the distance on it?
5,000 meters is black level in 20 minutes.
What's black relative to all the other levels? Starting?
So can you sit on a rower and row for 6 minutes without stopping?
Okay.
That's the entry level.
Okay.
No distance. It's just, can you continue to move for 6 minutes?
Okay.
And then it goes to 12, and then it goes to 20, and then it has a graduated, like, can you get this many meters in 20 minutes? Can you get this many meters in 20 minutes?
I got 5,000 in 20 minutes. Where does that put me?
That's black, buddy.
Is that good?
I think that's freaking stellar. I think it's stellar. But,
yes!
You know, this is probably my personal bias coming up, but I think the rowing test that we have is by far the most difficult. But, you know, we're in the middle of the CrossFit Open right now, and I'm the fourth fittest male in my gym. And the last two workouts we've had have been like 14, 20-minute burners. I'm dying. I'm literally dying because feel like I'm a strong guy. My cardio is like hot trash for a CrossFitter. And that's kind of another caveat to where like CrossFit has tapped into this realm of cardiovascular conditioning that I really do think is like unrelatable to even people who do fitness a lot. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to start focusing on some cardiovascular things after that weightlifting because ever since I started P90X and all that stuff, it's always been get stronger, get bigger, get stronger, get bigger. And I've been doing that since 2010.
Right.
And I'm about a 195-ish guy right now. And I have never once in my life worked on my cardio, ever.
Right.
Just whatever happens in class, whatever happens.
Right. That, honestly, that's what I joined a CrossFit gym for a while, and I was doing most of the conditioning workouts because I was working in the gym, so I was usually lifting at the gym. And I was doing the conditioning workouts, and I really enjoyed them. And I did like the spontaneity of it because it was different than what I would normally do. But the cardiovascular stuff is something that I've had and maintained fairly well, barring injuries for the last couple of years. I don't run or anything like that, and even that 20-minute row, that 5,000 meters, that felt really good. It smoked me, but I felt really good. However, my hips fucking burned for like the rest of the night. Like, I was laying in bed. I was like, my hips are killing me.
Have you done any rowing before that?
I mean, I know my way around a rower. I can do it.
It's kind of specific.
It really is. Pattern. Yeah. The tibialis, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I like it. I enjoy it. It kicked my ass, but then my joints just hated me. All right, little lady. All right, I did have a question I wanted to pose around the room because I was thinking about this. So we're all experienced lifters. We've done a little bit of this and that. I've done CrossFit. I've done bodybuilding, strongman. I've never done strongman. But anyway, the point is there's a lot of fitness out there. What have you changed your mind on or changed your programming on in the last 5-10 years? Like, for example, I do, because of my shoulders and because of my hips and my back, I do a lot more machine-based training when I get the chance. Like, outside of my own gym, my own gym's barbells and dumbbells and stuff. My own gym's gonna have what it's got. But Gym 5 has a lot more machines, so like hack squat, machine press, machine row, pull downs, things like that. More bodybuilding style, and my body seems to respond really well to it. And I feel like I can go really hard, like intensity-wise, go really hard without it really busting me up. So in terms of like what I used to do versus kind of how things have changed personally for my own programming, more of the machine-based bodybuilding pump style shit lately in the last couple of years has been kind of where I've started leaning more into. So I'm curious, based on your experience, and you do it all. Is there anything that you did a lot more of and you sort of backed off, or something that you're leaning more into? You mentioned that you did a phase of almost purely Olympic lifting.
Yes.
And what I'll have to admit, what I do love about you as a coach and all your experience. Jeez Louise, Liddy. Is that you are a technician, that you do want to like dive into the finite details of Olympic weightlifting, powerlifting, you know, I don't know, strongman, kettlebell, like really get in the weeds with all that. So you have a ton of experience, ton of like depth. Is there anything that you did do a lot of before and you've backed off of for your own personal reasons, or maybe you changed your mind on a perspective on something like that?
Man, early years of CrossFit, it was all about like machines are trash. Isolating muscles. Why would you do these things?
Right.
But man, I'm right there with you. It's fun.
Yeah.
Like it's just so bro-y and fun.
Yeah.
Every time, like we stay in Chicago for a couple nights before we go to Minnesota for a couple weeks every summer. We stay in this stupid nice hotel. It's the Lowe's Hotel over there near Navy Pier. It's stupid expensive. They have the coolest freaking bro gym in this hotel. And me and my wife, we get so excited. It's like, Lindsay, look at this machine. Look what this thing does. And we just like, we obliterate it. And I have, I don't have a lot of space, but as we're like experimenting with this new space we're in, we will have some bodybuilding equipment in the gym before the year's over. I would love to get whatever that kind of standard multi-trainer thing that you find at like a YMCA or something. You can do a billion exercises with it. It's just like a big like dual stack machine with a bunch of movable pulleys and stuff. I especially think and I think it's not just me. I think the whole like maybe CrossFit functional, you know, strength has kind of gone the other way of like trashing machine work and isolation type work and really just kind of doing an about face and like intentionally isolating things. And I think everything in life, man, it's this swinging ball. It goes back this way and then it goes back the other way. And I just think like, because it's like, especially when it's like you and your boys, like I saw you guys on the hack squat machine. I was like, that looks so fun. And I'm over here I'm just like staring at my barbells and my dumbbells. I'm like, yeah, these are cool. I like these kettlebells and stuff. But I think especially as I get older is like, retaining muscle mass, building muscle mass, it's just going to get harder and harder. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, doing some more isolation work, because I'm gravitating towards it and it's something to get excited about. I was excited about Olympic weightlifting for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then when I started hitting my head against a brick wall, I was like, this stuff sucks. Because it's like, it's a hard line in the sand. With some of the machine stuff, it's just like, I'll do 16 reps. And then next time, I'll do 12. Because you're moving and you're hanging out, you're communing with people. And that's something, if I would have told myself I was talking like that 10 years ago, it was like, dude, you're an idiot. So I'm right there with you on the like isolation machine work, just to like make things interesting and fun, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think too, like once you start hitting the gym 5-6 days a week, sometimes you're like, everything hurts.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Just keep moving.
That's definitely, especially in the CrossFit world sometimes. Oh gosh.
Yeah. Sometimes that's our Saturday workouts. Well, what's sore? Oh, this and that sore. My knees are hurting. My back's hurting. All right. Well, let's go over here and do these leg curls. We'll start there.
Yeah. I could definitely get in on some of that, man. I need to get some of that at the gym. Because yeah, it's not necessarily a linear type of thing either. It's just like, hey, we're moving, we're pumping, and you know, we're not dying. Maybe a little bit, but a little bit maybe.
Staying in the game.
Staying in the game, right? Staying in the game.
Well, right on, man. Well, John, it's really cool having you on. It's a bit of a full circle moment because you were the first person, I think, to reach out to me specifically for kettlebell training after I moved to Nashville.
Really?
I think so.
That's wild, man.
Yeah.
Is that because of your SEO?
It's because of my IG, brother.
Okay, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's because of the IG.
Found you on
Instagram, and I don't know if I made the introduction to Ryan with you or what, or maybe I found you through him. I don't remember, but I remember as soon as I decided I was kind of going to go my own route, I was going to dive head first into kettlebells. And me personally, I got to have a human being in front of me in my space. Right. Like watching videos are great. Looking at programs are great, but I remember on that back porch of that house you were at, and we were just like talking about stuff,
diving
into the little nuanced things of kettlebells that, you know, nobody would ever experience at just like a, I don't want to say a basic gym, but you know,
yeah,
getting into the weeds is what I wanted to do.
Yeah, man. And then obviously, you know, again, continuing the circle, you were at the very first Liftapalooza.
Yeah. I just now realized that, you know, a few weeks ago. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Way less gray in that beard back then, too.
Right, right. And then you did the TSC, the Tactical Strength Challenge that Vanessa and I hosted.
To this day, that has been my favorite time of training.
That was a super cool event.
That was.
And you were knocking it out of the park, man.
I think it was a last minute thing. We were like, hey, I got this thing happening in 7 weeks.
That's right.
And I hit a 2.5 times deadlift, 2.5 times body weight deadlift. I added 20 pounds to my deadlift and I lost. Dude, I almost lost 20 pounds.
Oh, gosh.
I was working out every day. And I wasn't really beating myself to death, but I was working out every day, and every goal that you and I set for that competition, we hit it.
Yeah. Remember how many pull-ups you did?
I think it was 19.
Yeah.
It was like maybe 19, or I think I wanted 22. It might have been 21. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
In a row?
Yeah. And I remember pulling that 425, and I remember saying, that was easy as piss. That should have been my second attempt. But, you know, that's what we right. wanted to do, because that would have been 2.5 times body weight. That was a body weight of 167 pounds. That's what I weighed in that morning at.
Right.
And I'm wanting to say I did 113 kettlebell snatches in 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
That was great, man.
That was
I love that training. I love that training cycle.
That was a heck of a time. Well, you know, I mean, hey, talking about like, you know, setting, like moving the goalposts, setting very specific goals, like the Tactical Strength Challenge is
yeah.
a really cool, very specific event. And then obviously here just last month, you filmed Dan John at Liftapalooza 2023.
That was pretty wild, dude.
And now here you are on the A to Z No BS podcast episode 102. So yeah, man, this is a really cool full circle moment.
It is pretty
here
cool.
Yeah,
it's been a long time. We've been doing this a while.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And it's been so cool the last few weeks going up to your space up there in Gallatin to see CrossFit Gallatin 2.0. you've got a huge facility up there.
It's an awesome place, man.
I mean,
3,900.
Yeah.
And it's its own building. and you know, you don't share space with anybody. We can be as loud as we want. Oh yeah, it's awesome, yeah. Dude. I love it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so you've built an incredible gym, an incredible community. Obviously, you're a family man, a husband, a father, and yeah, it's been really cool to be a colleague of yours over what, on the one hand, seems like a long amount of time because it feels like I've been here in Nashville for eons, but really in the grand scheme of things, 6-7 years is like nothing. So, yeah. But yeah, you're someone who I'm very happy and proud to call a friend and colleague. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing the time and being on the show today.
You too, David.
Thanks a bunch.
So a plug for Instagram, YouTube, anything you got out there?
Who is John Harris? That's me, basically everywhere.
That's a question we should all be asking.
Who is John Harris? He might be someone different in a year, which, you know, I kind of hope he is. But you know, I'm on the Instagram, on the YouTube. So yeah, I talk about, you know, all kinds of stuff, fitness stuff, but also, you know, decision frameworks, how we make decisions and why we make them and how we can change them and, you know, why we do the things the way we do them.
Yeah. I love it. Cool. Well, thanks again for tuning in. This has been the A to Z No BS Show. John, thanks again. Baby Summer slept through most of the episode.
Yeah, we were almost there.
She did so great. Wishing you all the best in your training, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.